This is a Steam Studio production.
Welcome to Conversations from the Studio, a podcast that fuels creativity and innovation through lively, thought-provoking discussions. Thank you all for joining us for the Steam Studio podcast. We've got some fun folks in the studio today. Joining me to facilitate the conversation is Dr. Lori Hensold. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Kristen. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the studio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And so we're having some fun conversations. We're inviting team members from NIU Steam and team members from the Illinois MTSS Network to talk about some of these kind of burning questions and topics that we both have run into over our work with schools. So joining us is Jess Nguyen and Carrie Harris. So Jess and Carrie, you guys want to say hi and each give us tell us a little bit about yourself. Jess, you want to go first?
Absolutely. It's nice to be here. Thank you guys for having me. My name's Jess Nguyen. I'm a STEAM educator with NIU STEAM and also a classroom teacher. I spent 13 years in the classroom with grades kindergarten through seniors in high school and even some college students in the mix. And I have had a wondrous series of events that have happened through my life that have really given me a different and unique perspective on education.
Thanks. And Carrie, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm Carrie Harris, and I am a coach with the Illinois MTSS Network. Like Jess, I do have a classroom background as well. I stuck more so with younger grades, though, second grade and fourth grade. And then I also have moved out of the classroom into some different unique roles that allowed me to work with a wider range of students. The first one being a reading specialist. I worked as a reading specialist with, kindergarten through eighth grade students. And then I also became a literacy coach and then an instructional coach. And so within that role, again, working with teachers with students in those grades as well. I also have had some experience being a student teacher supervisor and working with college students as well.
I love those student teachers. That was one of my favorite things to do too.
Yeah.
So I think what's been really fun as our two teams have worked together is we have found that as we work with teachers, there are certain themes that keep coming up or questions that we get. And we thought, why not bring our teams together and talk about some of these things? And I think the first one that seemed to float to the top was this idea of behavior. You know, that we hear a lot from our teachers of, well, how can I do that when I've got behavior issues in my classroom? Or what are some strategies for dealing with behavior? And as we look at the connection between behavior and engagement, we're like, this is a great topic. So I'm going to put the first question out here and see where we go with it. But since Carrie and Jess, both of you have really unique and vast classroom experiences with both the work you've done in schools and your own classroom, what is the connection between behavior and student engagement? What have you seen?
We're just going to jump right in the deep end. I love it. Here we go. Carrie, did you want to start? Did you want me to jump in?
Well, I think that one of the things to think about with behavior is, you know, what really is behavior and defining what behavior is. And those are really, you know, like your actions or your reactions. So when you think about engagement and behavior, it really does have a very strong connection because oftentimes your behavior can be a reaction to your non-engagement or engagement in a way that is not conducive to the learning environment.
Spot on. One of the things that I tend to notice is that students like curriculum and content that relates to their lives. And if they can't find a connection, they really struggle to pay attention and to give you the behavior you expect in your classroom. I think that the more we offer opportunities for students to really engage in the content that they're learning and have some voice and choice in what they're doing, the more we see their behaviors kind of go away. And you mentioned student teachers, one of the things that I think about when I work with my student teachers is like, they look at these teachers who've been doing it for 100 years who have their classroom management down pat and these systems down pat. And it all comes down to like, oh, well, is the teacher really hard? Is she have really high expectations? And the answer can be yes, or the answer can be like, the teacher has done a really good job of getting to know her students and knowing what works within the classroom and the group of kids that she's working with or he's working with. Because at the end of the day, knowing your students and building those relationships really helps to create a bridge for learning for students.
I love those answers. I love both of those answers. I think it's very insightful. And I really love the proactive part of that. You know, to sort of be preventative, we're saying in advance, if we engage students, if we make it relevant, if we know them really well, we can keep from some of those behaviors happening. And Carrie, I love that you made it between behavior and reaction, because sometimes we as instructors can escalate things by our reaction to behaviors. And so, you know, it's a two-way street. It's not just one way. And you guys captured it really, really well. A great topic for these guys, Kristen.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's one of those topics that keeps coming up as we have worked with different teachers to say, okay, let's implement this STEAM learning environment, which means, you know, it's a little more open-ended. There's a little more student-led. And that's one of the things that keeps coming up is, but how do I deal with behavior issues? And I think, Jess, you've always had some great strategies and ideas of how can STEAM or these different instructional strategies address some of those behavior issues, as you said, Carrie, proactively. So what are some of the strategies you all have seen or used or tried, and what works?
Definitely, when I consider strategies, I think a lot of it can also relate to teacher confidence. And confidence in yourself really is an important role in education. Knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, you have the knowledge, you are the educator, you've gone through the schooling, you know what you're talking about. Now it's just finding ways to connect to your students. And the confidence in being able to say, yes, it's okay, and taking that deep breath and making the jump to try something new is scary for a lot of educators, especially if they're following a curriculum and they're trying to find those connections for the students within the curriculum. It's taking the confidence, the confidence step, to just say, yes, I know what the content is. I see what the curriculum is asking me to do. How can I make this relevant for my students?
Those are some great ideas. I really do appreciate when teachers and reflect on their own student, their own experience as a student, and then what they know their students are interested in and engaging those likes and even dislikes into their lesson planning. Because some of my work with graduate students, we're working on working with students that are struggling readers. And so right away, you might have a student that's not engaged in that activity because it's something that they don't find enjoyment in or that they find is hard. And so one of the things we start with is doing an interest inventory. And so that can help shape what you're choosing when you're working with a student and you're pulling materials and making, you know, problems become relevant to their life. But then you also take those things that they dislike too. Okay, this student really does not like snakes, so I am not going to read that book on snakes, or I'm not going to explain that the sound that an S makes, or, you know, use different manipulatives like that too. So knowing their likes and their dislikes, I think, is a way to front load engagement.
I like that. I think back to Carrie, we were at a conference recently, and just the pure enjoyment to see the different authors and titles and books and what kids could find relevant or what new novel just came out that might be relevant to the student lives. And you're hitting it right on the head. Do we know what they like, or do we assume that we know what they like? And having them have some say in that is really important.
So are there any other specific strategies that you've seen teachers use that have been real successful that you would recommend to the listeners here they might try?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say choice is a very big one for engagement, having a multiple ways that students can show their learning, and that can be engaging. Those that want to write something, those that want to do something technology-based, those that want to do something visually or use their words, those are all different ways that give some student engagement within that opportunity of choice.
I cannot stress that more, 1,000% what Carrie just said. And one more thing that I might just add to that is also getting feedback from the students at the end of your lesson, because that can help to really give you a lens to see where your students are coming from, where they might want to go, some of the things that worked, didn't work, and building a nice conversation around how things went and how they felt is helpful too. And we don't always practice feedback very well. And so making an intentional effort to put feedback into our lessons and our days is really helpful for kids.
So when you think about that, are there ways that, you know, it's kind of a big shift for some educators or even for some students, is they go from a very structured class to suddenly now they've got some choice, or they're more in control of their learning. It's a little more personalized. What are some ways you can help ease that transition or help the students be successful in this kind of more open-ended, student-driven environment so that they feel, as I said, they feel they can be successful?
I think it's important to know what you want at the end of the day. I think as an educator, we have this wonderful lens that we see education and we want the biggest, the best. We want it to come out. We have 100 different ideas flowing through our heads at any given moment, and they are all exciting and they all have a place. But really knowing what you want your outcome to be is important, because then it gives your students an opportunity to see a framework. And if at the end of the day, you don't know what you want, the kids aren't going to know how to be successful in that, because then they're always trying to reach for a finish line that may not exist in your head. And that's hard. Again, as an educator, we always want to have fun new ideas. But coming back to what Carrie said is, if you want them at the end of the day to understand the standard, but the way that they get to that standard is kind of up to them, tell them that. I need you to be able to do X, Y, and Z at the end of this lesson. How you get there could be a visual performance. It could be an art piece, a writing piece, a science experiment. But just being really specific with what you need at the end is helpful for students to be successful.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And I would add to that the why. You know, if the why from you and the why from the student, and that internal reflection, why is it that I want this from the students? And then why, or how am I asking the students and explaining the why, and what am I getting from the students about why their response is that? When I am doing walkthroughs or different coaching scenarios with schools that I work with, we're getting responses, but what I often don't hear is that next step, that engagement of that why. Why is that the right answer? Explain your reasoning. How did you get that? Why do you feel that way? You know, moving that, pulling that out, engaging that student.
It's almost it's almost like the difference you hear of the learning how to do school versus learning how to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
I know we've talked a lot about the open-endedness, but Carrie, I know as an interventionist, you've had to work within confines. You know, you're working on a specific skill set with students. Do you have things that you've seen done in that more, I'm going to say, targeted and focused environment of providing interventions to students that have helped with engagement and or behavior specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things to think about is those, what you're doing to front load that work, right? So what are we doing to make the student feel like this is a safe environment? We ask our students to take risks as adults and educators. We have to have that growth mindset as well. So what are we doing to make the setting, whether it's, you know, a one-on-one or a small group or a whole classroom, what are we doing to make students feel like it's safe to have that growth mindset and to take that risk. And then as educators, what are we doing that we're giving that same message to our students, that I'm the educator and I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to try. So I think that's a way to start. I also think that when I was a classroom teacher, thinking about barriers that might arise and addressing those proactively were things that were helpful to me. From the interventionist standpoint, if there was something that I know a student would rather do one way, but that wasn't going to comply with the goal that I had written for that student, mm-hmm. or the plan, you know, is there a controlled choice within there that I can give that fits, you know, the goal that we're working towards? And then can I explain that too? You know, I know.
I love that you use the word controlled choice. I have never heard that term before. And that is now going to be my new phrase. That is something that everybody's like, well, we have to follow a certain set of rules, a prescripted curriculum, a prescripted set of standards. And the one thing, because I was an administrator for a little while, and I got a lot of feedback from the district that this is how your school should be running, and this is the things that the district really expects for you to do. And yeah, but also having some choice within that, saying, you know, teachers, this is the expectation from the district. How are we making it work for our students in our building? And that term, controlled choice, that is a fabulous way to put that. Thank you.
I'm glad you brought up the growth mindset too, because that it applies to us as educators. You know, we have to be willing to make those risks, like you're saying, Carrie, too. And that's a struggle, especially if you are a teacher who've been teaching for a long time and you feel like I should know how to do this, and then things don't work. So that was great. And, you know, if we just want to segue a little bit to barriers, you guys are both working as coaches in schools in slightly different environments, but you're there by the sides of administrators and teachers and interventionists, you know, helping them to do a better job. What are some common barriers that you encounter in engagement or behavior, classroom management? And then how do you help them address what those barriers are?
Are you okay if I start this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a hard one for a lot of educators because, like you said, Lori, we are the educator. We've been doing this. We should know. But how often do we actually do reality checks with ourselves? How often do we check in with ourselves and see, you know, where we are, where we've come, how we've changed over time? I think when you look at barriers to implementation of a lot of curriculum, whether it's STEAM or not STEAM, is the educator has a certain set way that they have figured it out, and it has been a long time since they've done any self-reflection on their practice. And it is easy to say that on this side of the microphone, but it is harder in person to do. But taking time to intentionally reflect on your practice and do a reality check. Are you still doing the same things you wanted to do? Remember back when you were a student teacher? Remember all those really cool ideas? Did you push them away because you got into the mundane rut of this is how it should be? Or are you still trying new things? Are you still willing to do new things? I think that it is important for us to remove the barrier of ourselves before we really jump into, well, it's the students. Because it's not always them. Sometimes we have to do our own reflections too.
And I think that is a great response. And I was thinking along the same lines of barriers are not taking into consideration that our consumers, our students, the consumers of the knowledge that we're trying to put out there change every year. So a common barrier that I see is trying to apply the same thing over and over with different consumers, with different students. So yes, the learning standards are still the same. Yes, the expectations of what you want the students to walk out of that grade being able to do and show and build upon for that next year are there. But how you're going about that and who you're serving needs to be adjusted to align with those students that are in front of you at that time.
and also be willing to make the modifications for all of your students. I think a lot of times we fall into this place of, I have to make modifications for X, Y, and Z student, but then what about the other students? Make the modification for all of them. The benefit does not diminish because it is given to a group. In fact, it oftentimes you'll find students who maybe didn't have an accommodation on an IEP or something else, but that still needs that support. And so be willing to make those modifications for all your students and recognize, like Carrie said, that they're all a different audience coming from a different place.
And equal doesn't mean the same. We're trying to give everyone what they need to be successful, but that does not mean everything needs to be the same or equal. And oftentimes, especially when I was a newer teacher, I would worry myself about, well, what would one student think if this student was standing and the others are sitting? And I saw that in my student teachers as well that I supported. And oftentimes the students, it was not no concern to them. They didn't notice it. They didn't question it. Or they just understood that concept that equal does not mean the same. And having someone be successful means that there's different needs, and that's okay.
I think you're also hitting on another point in your classes, Carrie, of the way that you made students feel, that classroom environment that you created where students felt comfortable and safe. We're going back to that thought process you had earlier, feeling safety in being able to change. And I love that you exemplify that as an educator. I think that if more of us could be that empathetic and have those classroom environments, we would see a lot more success across the board.
So one of the challenges or barriers that I hear about occasionally is time. So how do you help teachers, you know, find the time and make this a priority? What are some of your tips for the barrier of time?
I don't like that time as a barrier. I think that's an excuse. I think that when we talk about this barrier of time, we are coming back to what we were talking about earlier, which is fear of change. And at the end of the day, what do you want your kids to walk away knowing? And the way that they get there can be STEAM. It can be very curriculum heavy and content heavy. But putting up a barrier of time, it kind of exemplifies this fear that a lot of educators have of, well, I don't have time because I'm afraid to try something new. And we talk about, in this whole podcast, we've talked about taking risks and we've talked about, you know, taking feedback, and you're never going to know unless you try it. And I challenge every educator that I talk to just try it. And if it doesn't work, let's modify it together. Let's workshop it. But you will never know unless you try.
I think those are very good points. I also see when educators that I'm working with bring up time. I say time, sometimes I say time is a four-letter word, right?
Yeah.
We know that we have a finite amount of time, and we oftentimes have an infinite way that we could spend that time. So looking at being proactive and thinking, what is it that I want to be able to accomplish in this time? And then thinking about planning that out in best use of that time beforehand, during, looking at and being able to adjust, okay, this didn't take as long, or this is taking a little bit longer. How is this going to change like the plan that I made? And then that reflection part afterwards, was this the best use of time? Did I find that my estimates of time might be off, or the students needed more time to engage in this, or I let this go a little bit too long? And then did I really use the time wisely? When I'm doing walkthroughs or I'm doing observations, I'm able to take those timestamps and look and say, hey, you spent 15 minutes on taking attendance or the lunch count, and you said that was going to be 5 minutes of your plan. And so are, you know, those kind of adjustments and being aware.
Yeah, sometimes we're not good at being mindful of the amount of time certain things take. And just getting better at making those estimates or using time differently to address, as Jess was saying, kind of what are those priority things and how do we dedicate time to the right places?
I often wonder as an educator if what happens if I mess up? Do I mess up these kids' educations for the long run? If I try something new and it doesn't work, did I just like really create a problem for students? And I know that that fear can also reflect in this concept of, oh, well, I just don't have time, or it's just a fear that a lot of educators have. And I think as an experienced educator, and Carrie, please correct me if I'm wrong, but at the end of the day, if you are doing the best you can for your students, oftentimes you'll find success. And I think if you really just give yourself some of that freedom to let your creativity and your passion for education and what you do shine through, that the kids will learn from it. And it's okay to make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. And when I was in my classroom and I would spell something wrong or I would give them a wrong concept, I would say, hold on, friends, like, let's be real. I made a mistake. I made an error. And I admitted it to my students, which some teachers are like, oh, never admit you're wrong. But I am. I am human. I make mistakes. And I am going to correct them. And I'm going to model that behavior of correcting my mistake and acknowledging that I'm not always the smartest person in the room. Sometimes they know things that I don't know. And I think that those traits in educators can be really powerful for student learning. Because now you're not just modeling, you have to know the content. You're modeling how people should interact with education. How do you think about yourself as an intelligent human being, as a student, as a teacher?
You're using those as teachable moments. And you're right. We are human and we do make mistakes. And if we catch it ourselves, we can, as I did in my second grade classroom, wait a minute, that's not right. What did I do wrong? Can someone help me figure out what I did wrong? Or just lay it on the table. I did this wrong and this is how I'm going to fix it. How do you feel about that? You use it as that teachable moment. That's what life is, and use your expertise and your role in helping model and shape those students. That will probably be a moment that they remember way more than in a moment that you made a mistake and didn't own it.
Yeah. And it endears you to your students. Then they feel, again, that safety comes back into play. Oh, well, Jess made a mistake, so therefore it's probably okay if I make a mistake. She'll hopefully talk me through the same way we talked her through her errors. And then follow through with that. Do that. Hold the kids to the same standards you hold yourself to.
We've talked a lot about educators, and I'm curious, if you had a room full of administrators, instructional leaders, principals, that kind of thing, what recommendations might you have for them to support engagement and behavior in the school? So more of a at the system level, what might you suggest that they do or put into place or not do from your perspective in schools?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, because there is an opportunity for your principal or yourself as the principal or the educational leader, whether that's a department head or chair, other opportunity like that when you're working with adults, is to give them that opportunity to learn, right? And so sometimes that can be done through, you know, a simple practice of defining. We talk about behavior all the time. We talk about student engagement all the time. What does that mean? And having those conversations, starting with an understanding and a definition of what terms mean, what some evidence base behind those terms might mean. You could do like a article, a jigsaw or conversation, something that's kind of building that that understanding of where others are coming from. And then you can move that into some different activities, such as problem solving scenarios, something that's lower stake, and then moving into problem solving with actual things that are happening, doing some observations, hearing what others are doing, and then allowing that time for reflection and coaching. That coaching can come from you as an administrator. That coaching can come from colleagues. Coaching can come from other, you know, classroom teachers that are above or below the grade that you're teaching.
Absolutely. When I was an administrator and I would sit in staff meetings and I would look at the list of things that I had to go over, my recollection was, oh my goodness, I'm just a big teacher. Like, I'm still a teacher and this is still a class and we're all still in it. And so all of the things that I had done as an educator where I offered my students that voice and choice, it didn't make sense to take that away from my educators, because now I'm not dealing with students who are learning concepts for the first time. I'm dealing with highly intelligent professionals, and I needed to make sure that I was giving them their due and to treat them as if they don't understand concepts or that they are inferior in that manner really challenges their ability to feel confident. And we always want to continue to encourage our teachers to do the best for our students. Mm-hmm. So workshopping ideas together. Here it is. This is what we're doing. This is what we want to see. What is our common goal to get there? How are we working as a common group for the greater good of our school to get to X, Y, and Z? And also try new things. We all know that in a classroom setting, in a school setting, there is always that one person. And I say that in air quotes because it's unfair to call them that. But we do in our minds, we categorize them as, oh, there's that one teacher, or there's that one student who is just hesitant. We've tried everything. We've thrown the book at them. We'll stop throwing books. Open it. Let's look at things. Let's look at different strategies together. Let's come up with new ideas instead of just pushing the same strategy down their throat because it didn't work the first time and it's not going to work the 53rd time you've tried it. So how can we really help our educators look at things from a different lens and see themselves in a different light and promote their confidence instead of pulling it down and giving them that opportunity to be successful? It is hard when you have an educator and you're going into a room to do an evaluation and you have a really, you know, you got a one or a two on your Danielson, and it is hard to evaluate because it's hard to have those conversations. Triangulate your information. These are some of the things that I saw that I was really concerned about. Where are areas where you feel confident or where you struggle? Let them have that say and really give that feedback and then work together to strategize. Like Harry says, look at strategies, find new things, see where you can improve, because that at the end of the day is going to help the educators. But also one of the things, I don't know if in your instructional coach training you went through this, but a reality check with your educators, again, coming back to that, so helpful, because then it's, hey, let's take a moment. Let's video this lesson. Let me sit on this lesson. Let's talk through it at the end of the day. Let's have some of that real conversation with like concrete evidence. It's not just a, well, you saw what you saw. It's a dog and pony show. Like, let's film some lessons. Let's look and see how your students are acting with you. And then you have some of this open door conversation. All right, hey, friend, let's sit together and look at this. Let's see what we're at. And I use friend as a loose term. I call everybody friend. And the teacher started to recognize it. And they're like, are you really our friend? And I'm like, sure, why not? At the end of the day, we're working together towards a common good. I feel like it. But then giving them that confidence too, because even though they knew they hadn't done a great job on something, like, listen, friend, we've all been there. Let's find ways to really like move ourselves forward.
And I would add to that too, but that's absolutely wonderful. And you, again, taking that idea from that low stakes to that sort of high stakes, right? We can't just expect someone to be comfortable with having others come in or watching their videotape lessons. So what are we going to start with first? You record yourself for 5 minutes and maybe it's just audio on your phone and then you listen back to it. And you might work up into, recording visually, and then, taking that opportunity to reflect and look back at that. And I think the thing that I would add to as an administrator is, what are the tools that you're giving them to be able to do that, right? So are we giving them like a rubric, but we're not going to ask them to turn in their rubric, but here's something that you mentioned, or here's a variety of rubrics that might work for student engagement or behavior or teaching strategies or whatever it is that you've had that conversation with them about that they might want to improve. Give them some tools and give them some low stakes way to be able to engage into that reflection process, and then encourage them and keep in touch with them to move that into, do you want someone to come and observe you? Do you want a thought partner to have that conversation with? What can I do to support you? And give them, again, we want to give our students choice. To give them choice as well.
And be targeted. We can't change 100 things in 1 year. It's just not possible. Pick one or two things that we can improve upon. Maybe three. That seems like a lot for a lot of educators, but pick one or two things. Let's focus on these three things. And that rubric that Carrie's talking about, those are the three things on that rubric. This is what I'm looking for. How are you going to be excellent? Where is areas we need to improve? And maybe even make that with all of your teachers. Say, hey, as a school, we're all going to look at this. And let's sit down and let's talk about what does this look like in positive? And what does this look like in areas where we can improve?
Well, this has been an amazing conversation. A lot of great information, tips, thoughts, ideas. I just want to thank everybody for coming to the table. Hopefully, we will be doing this again around some additional topics. If you want to have further conversations with Jess and Carrie, I would say register for our Engage Learning Conference on June 20th, because we will be there. We will be having these conversations. But both Carrie and Jess are out there in the schools working with our teachers and, again, doing the great work that they're doing. So both of you, thank you. And thank you, Lori, for joining us at the table.
This has been a production of the STEAM Studio. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a review to help others discover our shows. You can listen on platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you to our partners, NIU STEAM and Northern Illinois University, for supporting this podcast. If you would like to learn more about the work we do, please check us out online at niusteam.niu.edu. Thank you so much for listening.